This is the one.
And now,
DFW Sports Angel,
Robin Valletudo.
Nail to the right, McGee to the left. Star dropping straight back. Hit as he throws. Has the ball. It is McGee. Touchdown.
And the old veteran scores the first touchdown of the Super Bowl game.
Welcome back to Inside the Game on 620 AM KEXB. In the house with the great host and author, Pat Wheeler. And Venus Ford, was that Frank Gifford?
What, on the announce?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some of the broadcast from Super Bowl I.
Super Bowl I, Kansas City Chiefs versus the Green Bay Packers. Frank Gifford, Hall of Famer for the NFL, but also an incredible broadcaster. He was on that broadcast working with CBS, and I think NBC was the other broadcasters. One of the, I don't know if it's the only time or the first time of the first Super Bowl, because the AFL and the NFL both had separate television contracts. They couldn't come to an agreement for one. So the Super Bowl, that first Super Bowl, was broadcasted live on both networks. How wild is that? And that's what we're going to dive into right now. We're going to take you back in time with a wonderful author, best-selling author, oral historian. He is a noted sports author and oral historian who's written more than 42 books, including Remembering Yankee Stadium, Remembering Fenway Park, and the autobiographies of Red Holzman, Nolan Ryan, and Tony Dorsett. Those names definitely resonate with Texans here. Cited in the Congressional Record and by the New York State Legislature as a sports historian and journalist, please welcome Dr. Harvey Frommer, professor in the Masters of Arts in Liberal Studies program at Dartmouth College. Welcome, welcome.
Well, I couldn't have written the introduction better, Robin. It was just wonderful. It's great being on with you again.
Well, I tell you what, I've got also your oral history book, Derek Jeter, which I absolutely love it. Just the pictures are so vivid, and the pictures tell the story themselves without even reading the book, but it definitely draws you in. Every book I've read of yours is such a wonderful, easy read. But my favorite, my all-time favorite, up until this one, because I just started diving into this one when I got it last night, but it was a 100-year, remember, what is it, Remembering Fenway Park, 100 years, is that correct?
Yep. Remembering Fenway Park, the first 100 years.
The first 100 years.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, and it's a big, wonderful, hardback book with the most vivid black and white and color photos telling the 100 years of history. Just an incredible, all of your books are great coffee table books. But the one we're going to dive into today is your latest work, and it's called When It Was Just a Game, Remembering the First Super Bowl. And I've got to tell you, we have another published author in the studio that was eager to sit in on the show today when he heard that you were coming on. So I want to introduce you to our very own favorite, Pat Wheeler.
Yes, well, I just was really interested in the first Super Bowl because Donnie Anderson was on my show a year or so ago, and remembering that game and all the details, not being a sellout, the tickets for like, I think, $7.50 or something crazy like that. And so I would love to read this book, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think the top price ticket was $12, Harvey?
Oh, 15.
Was it?
Wow.
Quite different today. What's the range today, Harvey?
The range is astronomical. The interesting thing is that a $12 ticket stub from that time today costs you $1,200 to get that stub. So that shows, the inflation and what happened there.
From 1967, and it's how ironic that we're doing this interview today, Harvey, because the anniversary of this game was yesterday, January 15th, 1967. And before we dive into the integral parts of how the game came together and the players, the coaches, just great history, first, talk about how did the story even come to be, and then how did you get the legendary Frank Gifford to write the foreword before he passed?
Hey, the story came to be in that the National Football League was the established league, and the American Football League back in 1966 was the warring league. It only was 7 years old, and the owners in that league were called the Foolish Club, because every time somebody came along and tried to form a league to battle the NFL, they were destroyed. This league, though, had Lamar Hunt and his big, big wallet full of money, and other owners who had a lot of money, and they just would not give in. And the big joke that I have in the book, that Lamar Hunt's father was asked, that your son is going to go broke. He lost $1 million in the first year owning the Kansas City Chiefs. He said, at this rate, he'll go broke in about a couple of hundred years. So they hung on, forced the merger in June of 1966, and a provision of the merger was that there would be a championship game played between the NFL and the AFL, and that's what pitted the Chiefs versus the Packers in that first game, January 15th, 1967.
And the
funny thing is that the two leagues had never even played an exhibition game against each other. They hated each other. And you had the establishment versus the new guy on the block. And my friends from the AFL, my friends from the Kansas City Chiefs, the final score was 35-10, but it was a much closer game than that in the first half. And they're still filling buckshot some of the guys, Rooter for the Chiefs, who said that the Packers were not 25 points better. The whole epic, mythical proportions of that game, including Donnie Anderson, who actually left after the Packers after that game and moved on to the New Orleans Saints. He didn't get along with Vince Lombardi that season. Vince didn't even talk to him because he thought he was a traitor going to leave. But that's another sidebar. Lots of sidebars
throughout this book, and we're going to dive into some of them and some of the unexpected developments that came out as well. But before we go to break, we just have about a minute to go. Harvey, your thoughts on Frank Gifford and your relationship and how he came to write the foreword of this book.
Okay, he was the first one that I thought of to do the intro, the foreword for the book, and I made contact with him. When I did my PhD dissertation back in the late 70s, I actually interviewed Frank Gifford for that thesis. He didn't remember me, but I've always admired him as a football player and as a national icon and as a broadcaster. And he said, great, I'll do the intro. I don't want any money. You're doing an important book. And that's how it came that Frank sadly died in August, and the book became available in October, so he never saw the book.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Well, I tell you what, we're going to leave you with a quote from Frank Gifford before he passed, NFL Hall of Famer, as we go to break. He says, in his detailed oral and narrative history, Harvey Frommer dramatically creates a narrative arc that brings back the time. So on that note, stay tuned. Do not change the dial. So much more with Harvey Frommer, author of When It Was Just a Game, Remembering the First Super Bowl, when we come back. Where you're listening to 620 AM.
Either you're first or you're last.
The big word in professional football is execution. All players succeed on the blackboard, but men make them work.
It's very important. But if you have not reached the pass, or if you can't get them, get your hands up.
Hey, supposed to be a hell of a defensive club. It didn't look like it to me.
Oh, God. Hey, get him out of there, will you? Hey, what about that now? He had him on a... Hey! He had him on a shirt! He had him on a shoulder pad. He didn't have him on a mask. What the hell's going on out here? Hey, interference! Interference!
I'll tell you something, Leroy. You're not going to get your job back unless we get a better performance.
The men who wanted to stay, they're still here. And let me tell you this, Green Bay is a great town for football.
Welcome back to Inside the Game on 620 AM KEXV. I'm Robin Valletudo in studio with Pat Wheeler, host of Texas Links on the Air, right before Inside the Game. Vinos Ford, our amazing co-host and producer. What a fantastic clip that was. Green Bay Packers. Amazing coach that will forever stay in our hearts for the impact that he had on the game. and especially up there in Packerland, Vince Lombardi. Now, we need to hear some of that from Big Red here with the Dallas Cowboys, don't y'all think?
Something.
Dino, thanks for pulling that clip, and please welcome back our very special guest for the rest of the hour today, so we hope that you stay tuned. Please welcome back a very accomplished author, oral historian, Harvey Frommer. We're diving into his latest work that's available to the masses, When It Was Just a Game, Remembering the First Super Bowl. Yesterday would have been the great anniversary, January 15th, 1967, Packers versus the Chiefs. And how timely is this? Because guess what? The Chiefs are back in the hunt, and no pun on Lamar Hunt.
You know. Clark Hunt.
But they will be playing, this is going to be a tough matchup. This will push them to the test. But the Chiefs are going to be playing the Patriots today. Look forward to that at 3:30 this afternoon. Then the Packers and the Cardinals will be playing the late game tonight at 7:15 p.m. here in Central Time. Tomorrow, Sunday, Seahawks and the top-ranked Panthers at 12 noon, followed up, Venus, I know where you're going to be, or where at least where your attention's going to be, the Steelers and the Broncos at 3:40 on Sunday.
Not really, but, you know.
Not really? Are you not hyped for this game?
Not really. We, we're very depleted, so.
I'm going to pull for the underdog. all right, please welcome back Harvey Frommer. Harvey, let's get back to the story, and Pat Wheeler has got a question for you.
Well, I haven't had a chance to read your book. I'm looking forward to it, but I heard the story about the clandestine meeting between Lamar Hunt and Tex Schramm at Love Field Airport here in Dallas. Is that in the book? Were they?
That's in the book, and it's told in some detail.
Oh, neat.
They cut the deal to get the warring factions together.
And also how the term Super Bowl came about. I think I know the answer, but it's pretty interesting how that happened.
Yeah, that is also documented in the book, and I've actually got it documented in the book by Lamar Hunt Jr.
Wow.
And so
he tells the story, that he and his sister had the ball, and it was a whammy Super Bowl, popular in the 60s. It could bounce over buildings or at least over small houses. And his father allegedly took the ball. And then when he went to an owner's meeting and they were having a back and forth as to what to call the game, he said, "How about the Super Bowl?" Then he immediately took it back. That's not a good name. But that name did catch on in the media and among the fans. The irony of ironies is that Pete Rozelle first came up with the idea of calling it the Pro Bowl, but there was a Pro Bowl. Then he wanted it to be the ultimate game or the big game or the World Series of football. None of those flew. So he did come up with the name, the AFL-NFL Championship Game. That was on the tickets for the first and second games in 67-68. And then when the Willie Joe Namath game, as I call it, game three, took place, it was then officially the Super Bowl. And anybody who tries to trade on that name, there's a lot of lawyers on the NFL that'll go after them.
Yeah, I tell you what, business owners out there, if you're looking to for a company name, just hang out with your kids for a while. Some of the greatest things come out of the mouths of babes, don't they, Harvey?
You're right, Robin. Absolutely right.
That's similar
to... You mentioned Vince Lombardi. You had another question? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's similar to the Masters. It was originally the Augusta National Invitational.
Right.
Bobby Jones did not like the term the Masters, but eventually it caught on. It's very, very similar to what you just described.
Harvey, yeah. What were you going to say about Vince Lombardi?
I was going to say that Lombardi gets tremendous accolades and respect and honor, but the other coach, Hank Stram, was no slouch either. And both of these men traveled with priests along with them all over the place, and some of them stayed on the sideline with them. They were both religious men. They went to Mass. Lombardi went to Mass every day, and Hank Stram tried to do it as often as he could. They were both people who worked 24 hours a day, 24/7 a week, just to have their teams in the best possible position to win. And when the game came to the halftime, Lombardi did not scream, even though he had a lot of pressure on him from NFL supporters, and although his tie was almost so tight that he was almost strangling on it and couldn't get the knot out. But he simply said, we played the first half the way the Chiefs wanted us to play. The second half, we play it the Packer way. And they just went out, you know, and just blew the game wide open in the second half. The Chiefs really were not a match for the Packers at that moment in time.
Harvey, talk
but
about...
But they gave them a good ride.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness it was not a blowout, and it is a game that will go down in history that no matter what generation we're in, we're always going to go back to where the NFL Super Bowl started, and just a special,
right.
History between the Chiefs and the Packers, even to this day, and how ironic that they could possibly play again this year. So it's so really cool to be bringing your story to life
right.
again right
and,
now as both
and,
of them
and
play
that would
today.
Really help my book sales.
Well, we're pushing it. Let's talk about how the oral history is so unique to this book.
Okay, that's the real thrill of it all. I'm an oral historian, and my wife and I both teach at Dartmouth College oral history, and we clone oral historians there. We only teach graduate students. But to get the history from the people who have lived it and then take it and rearrange it somewhat and make it into a book, that's the whole trick and the whole beauty of what I do. You mentioned in the intro that I did Remembering Yankee Stadium. I also did You Remembering Fenway Park, and I've done other books of sports books of oral history. But my wife and I have a book out now called It Happened in Miami, and that book has oral history in it also as a total oral history. In the Miami book, when it was just a game book, we have the Miami connection. Back in 1960, Bert Bell, the National Football League commissioner, had died, and the owners could not agree on who should be the new commissioner. This was in Miami, sunshine and light, but unpleasantness was going on. And somebody got the idea, how about this kid for the L.A. Rams? Also, the Rams now have come back in business. He was a PR guy there. And he said, he might be good. He could probably be controllable, and he gets along with everybody. So they sent the kid into the bathroom, the men's room, to hang out there while they went through their business, and they would call him out. That kid was Pete Rozelle, and he was 33 years old, and he said that he washed his hands so many times that they were getting frozen whenever anybody came into the men's room. Finally, there was a knock on the door, and they told him, congratulations, you are now the new commissioner of the National Football League.
Oh,
he came out to the podium, and his first words were, it's really great to be starting this new job. And he held up his hands, and he said, I come to you with clean hands.
Literally.
So that story was told to me when I was working on my PhD dissertation, and I was able to use Pete Rozelle as an oral history voice because he told it to me. And I had that all of those years from the late 70s until the time of writing this book. I also interviewed Howard Cosell to talk about oral history. And I went to his office, ABC offices in Manhattan, with my big briefcase at that time and a boombox tape recorder. And he started yelling at me, what the hell are you doing this book to this thesis? He said, you should do something about race relations or business or something better. This is a stupid topic. And the topic was media, sports, and football and its impact on culture. I said, Howard, all I want from you is maybe a paragraph or two to please my advisors, and I'll get the heck out of here. So he says to me, is that all you want? Sit down. You're not living here for a couple of hours. We're going to talk sports. And
wow.
I had two of the best hours of my life in terms of interviews because he knew everything.
That is incredible.
So I had this is my triple header. I had Rozelle, I had Cosell, and then I got to Frank Gifford. And he was a part of the oral history interviewing also. So I kept those tapes all those years, and I went into so many other directions in my books. But I always wanted to do this book, and having these tapes, so they mix and match with the people who are alive and those,
well,
those people, the other people are from the other side.
Harvey, it's already time to go to another break, but we've got one more exciting segment to bring our listeners with you and talking about when it was just a game, remembering the first Super Bowl, Packers versus the Chiefs. So many players involved in this book. We're going to continue to dive into them and the story, and also talk about any interesting wrinkles that developed along the way. So don't change the dial. More of Inside the Game on 620 AM KEXB right after this break.
From Wall Street.
Can't move the ball against us. Let's do the job on it, baby. Come on. Watch a play action pass. Play action pass. And make sure you keep them in that pocket. They didn't know where to go.
Yeah, Kosulke was running around there like it was a Chinese fire drill.
65 toss power trap. That might pop wide open, Rats.
Running play coming to Garrett on a trap. Touchdown!
Garrett scores. Oh.
Was it there, boys? Was that there, Rats?
Oh, the ball,
nice one, baby.
Yeah!
The Mender. 65 toss power trap. Yeah!
Make sure you mark it right. Oh, you lost your place. Measure it. Take the chains out there. Oh, they didn't make it. My God, they made that by an inch. He definitely gave an extra foot. Bad. Very bad.
Just keep matriculating the ball down the field, boys.
The great Hank Stram. Welcome back to Inside the Game on 620 AM KEXB as we are talking about a wonderful oral history book, When It Was Just a Game, remembering the first Super Bowl in the house with Pat Wheeler. So glad you could stay the whole hour, Pat. And Vinos Ford, thanks for finding that clip. We were doing research and trying to find something from Super Bowl I. It was very challenging, of the great coaches, Vince Lombardi. Both and Hank Stram both have great passion. One a little bit more harsh with his language and his choice of words, Vince Lombardi. Hank Stram seems to keep it clean, Vinos, but what a fun clip that you found from Super Bowl IV. And along with both of these teams, incredible quarterbacks that went on to become Pro Football Hall of Famers in the NFL. So I'm going to read a clip from Harvey Frommer's book by Len Dawson, the great quarterback from the Kansas City Chiefs back in the day. He says, I had a lot of incentive getting myself ready to play in that first Super Bowl. I was a cast off from the NFL and was almost a Packer because they needed a quarterback while I was with the Browns. Paul Brown was thinking about sending me there, but he turned around and sent another quarterback who would and could do some punting as well. So back in the early years of the NFL, these guys had multiple roles like they do in high school today. But he goes on to say, but to go against the Packers and all the players who were there, they were my vintage. A lot of the players I played against in college, it was special. That was by Len Dawson. Please welcome back the great author of this wonderful, beautiful book and oral history, When It Was Just a Game, remembering the first Super Bowl with the foreword by the late legendary Frank Gifford. Welcome back, Harvey.
Great. Thank you for having me back, Robin.
And this is going to be a short segment, so let's quickly dive into the players in this game. Two quarterbacks that go on to be Hall of Famers, two legendary coaches that go into the Hall of Fame as well.
And plenty of other players who were special and are in the Hall of Fame, too. Hank Stram, I mentioned Vince Lombardi. Hank Stram of the Chiefs had all kinds of rituals and beliefs. He paid a great deal of attention to detail, like having Dial yellow soap in the showers, thinking it reduced infections, like practicing over and over again the right way for a punter to give up a safety to his own end zone, like how his team should run out on the field to warm up, and like replacing every shoelace in every shoe prior to every game.
Wow.
So that kind of stuff I got through oral history and through people telling me things. And I went back and I dug up, just for your listeners and your edification, Lamar Hunt Jr. explaining in the book, my dad was at an owner's meeting. They were trying to figure out what to call the last game, the championship game. I don't know if he had the ball with him, as some reports suggest, but my dad said, well, we did come up with a name, something like the Super Bowl. And then he said, actually, that's not a very good name. We can come up with something better. But Super Bowl stuck in the media and word of mouth. So I drooled when I got that, you know, in my interview with Lamar Hunt Jr., because I became now a witness to history, and then the readers become witnesses to history, because that's now part of the book.
That's so fantastic. I tell you, the Hunt family has such a staple in sports, professional sports, obviously here in Dallas and definitely in Kansas City. The book is filled with all kinds of great players of the game, from administration, the front office, the longest standing employee in the NFL from back 1965. It's just so many cool caveats of the book. What did you learn from doing this book? And as you say, talk about that, what is your most favorite oral history in the book?
Okay, what I learned, which is something I didn't know, and I've written books about Jackie Robinson and race relations, and I mourned the passing of Monty Irvin just last week, who I knew very well, is that both Stram and Lombardi deserve much more credit than they've ever gotten in leading the way to make the National Football League much more integrated than it was back then. Today, 70% or more of the players in the NFL are African Americans. That line goes back to Stram and Lombardi, who both of them encouraged diversity. They both had scouts working in Negro colleges and bringing in black talent to their teams. And it's been estimated that on January 15, 1967, there were more black players on a professional football field than in any other time in history. And that's because the Chiefs and the Packers had quite a few black players. And this was a league that for about 10 years after the start of the draft until 1949 did not draft any black players. And Lombardi got flack from some of the people in Green Bay, claiming that he was wasting a second-round or a third-round draft pick on these black players. So all of that was something that I really learned, and in my gut I was very moved by. And I think in addition to being Hall of Fame coaches, Stram and Lombardi were Hall of Fame people.
Harvey, we only have 2 minutes left. Final question from Pat.
Well, is there an interesting wrinkle to the book? Did anything unexpected come into the fold as you're developing the book? You touched on that, I think. What was that that you learned?
What I learned is that the whole I'll really go out on a limb. I learned that the whole history of sports and culture in the United States made a complete pivot with the playing of this particular game. Baseball back in '67 was king. And Pete Rozelle simply wanted his new game, the Super Bowl, to at least be better than baseball, be better than the World Series, at least be equal to the World Series. What I see now as we get ready to have the 50th Super Bowl played is that Rozelle had a very minor league dream because he didn't even envision what he created. I mean, he's, right, in my opinion, the greatest commissioner in the history of sports, and it was his foresight and his insight and his work that really created this ultimate game, which
Harvey,
was one of the names for his idea to call it.
Well, we are already coming to a close, Harvey, and I want to close out with this quote from Peter Golenbrock, author of Landry's Boys and the Bronx Zoo, and this is about your book, When It Was Just a Game. Remembering the first Super Bowl, he says, read it from cover to cover. It's a masterpiece. Vince Lombardi would have loved this book. It's a winner, he would have proclaimed. You will love it too. Harvey Frommer, through the voices of the participants and significant others, tells a rollicking adventure of the very first Super Bowl. The material is fresh and fascinating. He says he could not put it down. Guess what? That's not all we're going to get from the Frommer family. His lovely bride, Myrna Katz, helped you write It Happened in Miami, the magic city or an oral history. We're going to welcome her next Saturday to Inside the Game. Harvey, thank you so much. Where can folks buy the book?
They can buy it anywhere. Better get it on Amazon. And if they want to send me an email, they can get an autographed copy and save it as a Christmas gift. My email is harvey.fromuth with two M's at Dartmouth, Dartmouth, .edu.
Fantastic.
Send me an email and I'll respond.
Okay, thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your afternoon, everyone. Appreciate you tuning in. God bless.
Thanks for having me on. Bye-bye.